The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by AIB. We see Brave and we're backing it through Brexit.
Sticking with fame and celebrity, our next guest has photographed some of the wealthiest people across the world in their own homes. Celebrated designers, aristocrats and royalty. The Dubliner is a world-renowned photographer. He's worked for the likes of Vanity Fair, The New York Times and W Magazine. Many of his favourite shots feature in his book, The Lives of Others. He joins me now, Simon Watson. Travelling around the world, taking pictures of fabulous homes, sounds like an incredibly glamorous life, is it?
It's very glamorous, half of the time. It can be very glamorous. It's a very enjoyable job. It's a great career. I really enjoy it. I love my work. But the other side of it is, you know, arduous. It's, you know, cancelled flights, sleepless nights in dirty motels.
You don't get to stay in the castles.
Sometimes I do get to stay in the castles, yeah. I mean, that's when the job gets really glamorous and very enjoyable. I'm not sure glamorous is the word, but certainly very interesting and great fun. Great fun, absolutely.
How did you get into photography in the first place? I mean, let's start at the beginning. You were born in Dublin. What was the family background? What were your parents into?
We grew up in a household where the arts were basically everywhere, you know. So, you know, during the weekends, my mother and my father would drag us around, you know, Georgian squares of Dublin. My father would quiz us on this kind of architecture, that kind of architecture. We'd go to the National Gallery in the weekends. I can remember little things from the past, you know, when I was really small. I can remember my father taking us to the National Gallery, and the three of us, the three children, huddled around a little small Rembrandt, The Flight to Egypt. It's a beautiful little painting. And I can remember him describing how the light was coming from within the painting as opposed to exterior. It wasn't coming from somewhere outside the painting. And that really stuck with me.
So you were drawn to visual things, beautiful visual things, I suppose, for, as a kid in terms of what your parents talked to you about. But what did you want to do? What about college and study? What were your plans for a career?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question. I mean, I was, you know, your typical lost teenager. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew what I liked, but I didn't really imagine a career in photography. I mean, after all, I was growing up in Dublin in the 1980s. I knew I liked painting. I knew I liked art. I was always drawn to that. I was probably a bit of a chancer. You know, I'd wander around Dublin, Stephen's Green, wearing, you know, tweed jackets that had frayed elbows, and I had elbow patches on, and, you know, a well-thumbed copy of Kierkegaard in one of my pockets. I was a real poser, really, I suppose, is what you would have called it in the 1980s. I was also in a band. I was in a band like every other kid, I suppose, growing up in Dublin at the time. And that was great fun, but we were absolutely awful.
What was the band called and what did you play?
Oh, God. Well, I played guitar and I sang, both dreadfully. The first band, I think, was called Pagan Angel, which could only have come out of the 1980s.
Are they on Spotify, Simon? No.
No, they're not on Spotify. I'm sorry. I can't please anybody there. Thank God. we then became Matt Vinyl and the Silk Emulsions, which was, a funny name. And then we moved on to Self Portrait. We became more serious about our music, I think, at that point. But, you know, that fizzled out. Then I suppose when it came time to do my Leaving Cert, I did my Leaving Cert and I did sort of okay, but I didn't get into what I wanted to do. I wanted to get into drama and philosophy in Trinity.
Well, you already had the Kierkegaard book anyway to start with, so.
I already had the Kierkegaard book, you know. I had the ideas, I just didn't have the talent. and I did go for an audition at the drama part of the college in the theatre, which was dreadful. I mean, it was appalling. I stuttered my way through the beginning of Shakespearean lines and I had to restart, I don't know, 10 times. And eventually they just said, well, thank you very much. We let you know. And of course, I didn't get in. So then after my leaving, I went to a college. I'm not sure if it still exists, called the Liberties Vocational College. And I went there. It was supposed to be a 2-year course. And I think I maybe made it through 3 or 4 months. I think at that point was I was really stuck. I really didn't know what to do. And I had, you know, my father bought me a camera probably when I was about 16, 15 or 16, I can't remember. And I quite enjoyed taking pictures, but I never thought at that point I would have a career of it. But because I had done this film course in the Liberties Vocational College, I thought, well, maybe I'll try my luck in New York. So off I went thinking I was going to be Martin Scorsese. And that didn't happen. But I stayed in my second cousin's flat. He and his boyfriend lived down in Battery Park City. And I got a job in a film production company as a runner. I found myself driving around Manhattan in a truck, delivering equipment, picking up photo equipment or film equipment, dolly grips and all that kind of stuff. And it was there that I met this young guy who was a photographer's assistant. And he said to me, like, dude, you want to be a photo assistant? And I said, yeah, sure. I don't know. No problem. I'd love to try it. And I found myself on a fashion shoot a week later out in the Hamptons, staying in some fancy hotel. I couldn't believe my luck. I got to like it. I think I liked the process. And because of my interest in art and painting, which I was always doing at that time, I was constantly painting, I thought, well, maybe I should try my hand at photography. And that's kind of how it started.
What about, Simon, when it comes to confidence? Like, you know, you talk there about you went for the drama audition and you've no problem about saying it was all a bit of a car crash. Then you went to this, then you went to that. I mean, were you a confident person? Did you? How did those setbacks sit with you? Did you manage to just brush them off?
I think I did brush them off. You know, I suppose I am a confident person, and I think I was confident when I was younger. In fact, I was probably more confident when I was younger. I suppose that, you know, in a way, you don't realize the consequences of being too cocky. You know, I think I was probably. Part of me was cocky, you know, but when it came to performing, that was something I'd never done before, so I was very nervous. And as a kid, I had a stutter. And so that comes back. It doesn't really come back anymore, but it used to come back and haunt me in my later teen years and my early 20s when I was nervous. So I don't know. That's just the way that happened. But yes, I think I have confidence in my work and in, you know, I have confidence when I meet the people I meet. I know what to do. I know what to say. I know how to behave. I know how to react. But I don't think that necessarily crosses all aspects of life.
So you're in New York. You've got this job in photography. It's around fashion. Talk about landing on your feet. That sounds fantastic. I mean, and as somebody who obviously has gone on to be a very successful photographer, would you not have stayed with fashion? That surely that for many people, that's the pinnacle.
No, I think I was always too intimidated by beautiful women. So I don't know. That's when my confidence would go down, I suppose. I knew my comfort zone.
So what about the people then, Simon, when you go along to one of these big castles or fine houses, Italian aristocrats or whatever, how do you get on with them? And you're photographing them as well. So you've got to have a bit of a connection, good or bad.
Initially, you know, when I first started doing this, I didn't really know who these people were. I didn't know about their lives, you know. It's interesting with these Italian aristocrats. People think they're all super wealthy people. They're not. They're normal people and they struggle financially. They've been handed down these huge buildings and estates that they're not really able to sell because it's not just owned by them, it's owned by them and their cousins and God knows how many people. And nobody can really sell it. And so these are normal people living normal lives, and except they happen to own these huge edifices, which can be a noose around their neck.
And when you go in to photograph a really fine castle or villa or whatever it might be, are you looking for a bit of the warts and all, or are you pleased when it's absolutely pristine and immaculate, or do you want to see parts of it that are a bit more lived in?
Yeah, I'm not really interested in the pristine or the immaculate, to say the truth. I never have been, because it doesn't seem real. It seems fake to me. It always has. What I'm really looking for is an angle in which to photograph it to make it look beautiful and melancholy and a little somber, maybe. You know, I like that. I like the shadows. I like the darkness. I like the penumbra, the light between the shadow and the dark. For me, that they're evocative. You know, that's an evocative way of taking a photograph, and the photograph becomes not just a documentation of a space. It becomes something more. It becomes maybe a little bit of poetry. It tells a story.
And tell me about the Duchess of Alba. You photographed a place in Madrid, a palace in Madrid of hers.
Yeah. The Duchess of Alba, she was a very interesting character. She's dead now. But, you know, there's been several Duchess of Albas, if you like. Goya painted them. Velasquez painted them. It's a very long-standing aristocratic family. And this past Duchess of Alba was, I believe, the most aristocratically titled woman in Europe. There was a joke that the Queen of England had to bow to the Duchess of Alba. That's actually incorrect. But and then there was another joke that she could take the Scottish crown. She could lay claim to the Scottish crown. I believe that it was actually probably true, but she didn't. But when I went to photograph her in Madrid, that was a very stressful morning. I remember that because we were late. We were very late. And it was very, very hot in Madrid. The taxi driver didn't know where the palace was, and we were a bit frantic. We were about an hour late, I can't remember, but we were very late. And when we arrived, we were greeted by a very, very stern woman, the Duchess's assistant. And she said, "Well, you're late. You know, you have 60 seconds with the Duchess. She'll be here in a few minutes. You better be ready." And that was panic. Normally, I wouldn't really worry too much about these things, but the pressure sometimes gets put on, and I was caught off guard and I was sweating. My assistant was fumbling around to load cameras. And anyway, we eventually met the Duchess of Alba. She arrived. She was perfectly pleasant, but she literally gave me 60 seconds. But I have to say, I was very happy with the photograph. I photographed it with two different cameras, and I think it's one of the best portraits I've ever taken, actually. So I was thrilled with that.
It's in a general sense, and I'm asking you to generalise, meeting these people from aristocratic families and big castles, and I know you're saying that they're asset rich and cash poor and various things like that.
Well, they're not all, but yes.
What do you think of them? I mean, you know, many people would just say, look, they have incredibly privileged lives. It's intergenerational privilege. And how busy really are they that they can only give you 60 seconds?
Yeah, well, I would agree with everything you just said. I think they are. They're absolutely right. They've been privileged for hundreds of years, these families. And on face value, it doesn't seem fair. And I agree with everything you just said. But, you know, when you meet somebody like the Duchess of Alba, no matter what you might think of privilege, her family is still a very historical family, connected to all sorts of events in the past. You know, when the time comes to meeting these people, you know, it is interesting. It is an interesting background. It is history. It is heritage. It's all those things. So, you know, I tend to put my ideas about privilege and what it should or should not be behind me, and I just get on with the job.
At the total opposite end of the spectrum, Simon, you also photographed Christine Louboutin. What was he like?
You know, when I got the job to photograph him in his apartment, I wasn't fazed at all because, you know, that's kind of what I do. I find myself in those situations often, you know, photographing famous fashion designers like Karl Lagerfeld or Valentino. I've done all those people, and I'm not anxious or nervous about that at all. It's kind of my world. When I went to Christian Louboutin's apartment in Paris, I wasn't worried about that either. And it was a beautiful apartment and I photographed it. And the day after I was to photograph him, and I hadn't met him yet, and he walked in and he had a bit of a scowl on his face. And he looked down at my shoes, my boots, my old worn scuffed up boots, which I never polish. And I could tell he was judging me. You know, I really felt on the spot. And for some reason, I became very nervous and I started to sweat and I didn't take a good portrait of him. I mean, he warmed up eventually, but it was too late. I had already taken several bad pictures of him.
He put you off your game.
He put me off my game. He won. He won that battle. But it was kind of funny because, you know, here he is, this guy, you know, the world's most important shoe designer, and Simon Watson walking in with his scruffy old shoes. I should have known better. I should have polished them.
Is it a very tough business to get into?
It is. It's a very tough business. I don't think I'd like to be getting into it now. I think it's extremely tough now. I mean, it was very tough when I was 20. You know, when I arrived in New York, it seemed, even though I enjoyed, I loved it, you know. I loved being part of the photo district. There was a whole area in New York called the photo district. And I loved being part of that. You'd meet people around 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, going to the lab, dropping off film, and you'd still see the strobe lights flashing from the various buildings around the neighbourhood. And it was a very large neighbourhood, actually. But from that scale, it almost seemed like, you know, an unsurmountable climb for me. I didn't feel like I could actually make that climb.
When you go into a beautiful home,
yeah.
What do you think of interior designers? Do you think that they actually enhance the place, or can you sense whether a place has had a designer in it or not?
You walk in and it's sterile. It doesn't say anything to me. There's one of everything, you know. There's a Mark Rothko on the wall over there, and there's a Sean Scully. No offense to Sean Scully, but there's a Sean Scully over on the other side of the wall, and there's one of everything, you know. It's that kind of mentality. You know, hedge fund manager kind of mentality. Let's buy this, let's buy that. And, you know, an interior decorator who thinks, well, these guys are going to pay my salary for a long time. They don't, for me, I'm not interested in them. I don't like them. I do end up photographing them because I'm a photographer and I have clients and they want me to photograph that and I need to make a living. So I find myself in those situations. But I don't like it. That's not to say there are some truly wonderful interior decorator architects out there. Really and truly, there are.
Are you very expensive, Simon? If you came now to, if I wanted you to come and photograph my home, myself, a few nice portraits, every room, it's a two-bedroomed house, so, you know, you might be able to do some sort of a discount. What would it cost me?
No comment, Richard.
I can tell you it's definitely lived in.
I'm sure we can make a deal there. I'm sure we can make a deal. When the pub's open, you can buy me a couple of pints.
Oh, I'll take that.
Okay, that's a deal.
So, Simon Watson, the book is called The Lives of Others. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. The pleasure was mine. Thanks very much.